Okay, so it's 5 minutes, so I don't have too much time to review the whole lecture, but I think just a review of the canonical formalism or the canonical foundation of 3D gravity is fine. So maybe as you recall, we wrote the Einstein-Hilbert action in first order formalism. So you have some volume element if you want. I can use this notation. And then you can decompose it in terms of the zero components and the spatial components, which you will know by this. Okay. So here you have something like F0A and FAB, with some Lorentz index that I won't write. So you do that, you do the composition explicitly in terms of the spatial parts, and you find that the temporal component doesn't enter with a derivative in the action, so it means it's a Lagrange multiplier. So, of course, it's here you have an integral in time. Something like maybe. Well, I'm going to use omega, but I think you use a. Something like this. This goes with time. Of course, you have to contract with the Lorentz index, and you have like 1/2 because it's a two form in the spatial part. So from here, you can read basically you have first class constraints. Basically, just from the definition of momenta, you know that the conjugate momenta to omega, you can denote it like p. Something, if you want, has to be is constrained to be basically this, and you have to add this in. Okay, so you can think of this as a first-class constraint. As a primary constraint, not like this. It's just from the definition of moment. And these constraints, you can solve them. It's a primary constraint, but it's a second-class constraint, which means you can implement this constraint in the Poisson bracket. You can modify your Poisson bracket. So it's called the Dirac bracket, but it's basically the fact that this constraint is implemented by this bracket. So here you have that this p has to be the conjugate momentum of A, of omega A, and you can think of this as P, B, L, J, if you want. Delta A, B, and you can replace this by P, B, A, C, B. Function of this kind. How much time do I have left?
Well, if you can just conclude in 1 minute or 2.
Yeah, I don't think I would conclude. Well, okay. So that's.
But maybe you can just say something about.
I think I did it too long. Okay, I can conclude with these constraints. And
okay,
that's
perfect.
It. Okay. Okay, so you have this constraint, and then there is two more constraints which you can say are not primary, but if you try to do the canonical formulation formally for these guys, of course you will find that its momentum vanishes because there is no derivative here, right? So that will give you a primary constraint. Then you impose the consistency conditions of that, so you try to preserve this primary constraint, this trivial constraint under time evolution, and you will find the consistency condition implies these constraints. Basically, this E, A, B, something like that. Yeah, let's call something. FB, FAB. Of course, you have an index. And the other one is basically a character. No, it's not. It's PAB. So these are first class constraints. These are generators of gauge symmetries. Particularly, you can generate SO3 rotations and Poincaré translation with these guys, and you can also implement different morphisms through this first class. These are first class constraints. And I think that's enough.
Okay, thanks.
So thanks for your nice summary. So you presented a bit the variable and the constraint in a different way I introduced during the lecture, but it's okay. So what now we have is that we have this omega, so the spin connection that I was going to denote A, okay, with only one internal index and one special index. And here it's what we call the densitized triad. Okay, so here it's BL and it's a densitized triad. And these two variables are conjugated, so it's going to define our phase space. And now we have two constraints, which are so the flatness constraint and the Gauss constraint. Okay? So now we were left with the interpretation of this constraint. So let's move to the interpretation. So any question first on this? And as Alfredo already mentioned it, the Gauss constraint is going to generate rotation, SO3 rotation, the symmetry of rotation, and the flatness constraint is going to generate translation. So let's first, again, Gauss constraint. And if you remember, since we are talking about fields, we are only looking at smeared variable or smeared constraint. Okay, so here we look at the infinitesimal change associated with the Gauss constraint, where we look at the smeared constraint. So this is just in order to have everything well defined, and we will see that if we want to quantize, we don't like to quantize delta function, whereas now we are going to get rid of all these delta functions. So if we already did this computation on Friday, so I'm not going to redo it. If we look at the small change for the triad, the densitized triad, what we get is exactly that it's rotated, okay? It's the infinitesimal rotation with this lambda parameter. And again, here, everything, the fact that we have this integration here, we get rid of this delta, because here something is missing. These are fields, so they depend on the point on your manifold. So this is also a delta of x and y, so delta 2, okay? Two dimension. So how do you get this formula? I recall you just write R as a small parameter, where here you have the SO3 generator. You develop this, and you get this on the densitized triad. So now, what is the change? So this is what we did on Friday. Now, what is the change of the connection? And this can be found, so if we call, let's skip omega for the moment when we have two indices and then go to A when we have only one internal index. So it just can be found using just the definition that we have in terms of the triad. and the covariant derivative. So here, if you compute this at the integral form for the transformation, okay, the change of the connection by your rotation, you can show that you get and you have a derivative term, okay? So I let you check that explicitly if you want. And so you have this derivative term. So of course, when you go to the infinitesimal, so now let's go to the infinitesimal level and introduce this connection with only one internal index. Okay, I already used that, but now I'm going again to go back to, let's call it A, when it's only one index. And if you go to the first order, then you get that the infinitesimal transformation for the, in terms of lambda, so of the connection A, is just going to be given by the covariant derivative of this lambda term. Okay, and again, here we are talking about gauge symmetry, so it's a local symmetry, so everything is it's at each point. Okay, so that's why you have now this derivative here of this parameter. This parameter is dependent on your the point you are in your manifold. Okay, which is. And now I'm just going to give you the step how you do. So this is if you look at the change of the connection by when you perform a rotation. Okay, so now let's check what is, so this is the first point. Now let's check what is the infinitesimal, the change of the connection generated by the Gauss constraint. So this means that we want to look at this Poisson bracket, which define the flow generated by the constraint G. Okay, so here. So I want to compute this. So now, what is, how do you deal now? I just want to show you this calculation just because it's a bit different from the first one we did for the triad, okay? So why, and you're going to see the importance of this integral here. So here, if I write this explicitly, you get okay, so can you read? So this is something different. And then I'm supposed to close this Poisson bracket. So the A, what are the Poisson bracket which are the only non-vanishing Poisson bracket are between A and E, okay, are this one. So here you have A. So where do you have some E? You have here, but with the first derivative and here. So I'm going to do integration by part. And then what do you get? So if here for this term you do integration by part, then what do you get here? You can check explicitly. So this one is going to give you a term with these two E here, okay? So then you can check that indeed what you recover is exactly what we are expecting, meaning at the point x, again using this integration to get rid of this delta of xy, okay? And again, so this is infinitesimal rotation in the index j. So we have found that looking at the two at our variable on the phase space at the infinitesimal chain generated by the Gauss constraint, we can now conclude that indeed the Gauss constraint generate internal rotation, as Alfredo already mentioned it. So now the question is, what is the interpretation of the flatness constraint? So let's look at the flatness constraint. So I'm not going to do the calculation, so it's always the same. Okay, the same idea for the calculation. And don't forget to use the fact that you are dealing with smeared constraints, so you have this integration to perform integration by part when you need it, okay? So now let's have a look at the, do you have a question? Yeah.
Does Frege with respect to A or lambda?
So here it's lambda. Yeah, good point. Yeah, because A, so here you get with the integration by part, the derivative is going now to be on the lambda, okay? And then you use the fact that AE gives you a delta to modify, and so here it's not A, of course, it's a...
The index is a J.
Sorry?
The upper index is a J.
Yeah.
So it's
J, and I have an A. Yeah, that's why I got one. Okay. So AJ, JALM. Okay, so this should be correct. Thanks.
And could it be that there's in the second term before doing integration by parts, the epsilon KLM, ABL, EKM, that B contracted with what?
B,
not with
B.
That thing?
Yeah.
And then we have a K?
Yeah, there is
that
a
is
K. Con- upper J?
Yeah, it's K with K.
Okay.
Okay, and then LM, LM, and then EJ. Okay, so this one, all the indices are contracted. So here I would II, but if you, then I use KK. But since it's, okay, it's in, yeah, it's contracted, so you don't see. Okay, is that clear with the indices? So of course, each time, yeah, I'm using always notation. So when it's some, you can of course change the name, okay? So let's have a look now to the flatness constraint. And I'm going to let you check this calculation. So it's exactly the same kind of calculation. So you look first at the variation with, so if you remember, I used the n parameter to smear the constraint. So the variation is going to depend on this n vector. And what you get here, if you do this Poisson bracket, so again, you look at the Poisson, so here, if you want to look at the Poisson bracket, okay? And here, so what you get is, okay, which is epsilon and the covariant derivative of with C of ng. So let me give you also what you get when you look at the variation of the, but this you can, so do you have an idea what you're going to get here? So we are looking at the flatness constraint, so which is written in terms of F. F is in, written in terms of which variable?
Omega.
Yeah, it's just omega A now, the connection. So, and I'm looking at now, so to look at this variation, this means I'm looking at A with this, which, as you said, is just a function of A. So what do you get?
Yeah,
zero. Okay, and so what does this characterize? This characterizes an infinitesimal translation, okay? Because here we are dealing with in J, with a J index, so it's a one form. Okay, we are dealing with one form. So here we are adding a one form. What is the translation? What do a translation do on a one form? You add a one form. And you can check that this is the one form you need to add in order that your action is invariant. Okay? So here you can, so this is characteristic. So we can conclude that flatness generate translation. And here I'd let you check that indeed you can check that the action, this is really a symmetry of the action, is invariant. If you go back to the first order action, you can check that the action is invariant just by replacing. So what does it mean that it is invariant? You need to replace the triad or the cotriad by okay, so in your action, you replace this by this using this expression, and you will see that indeed you find that and A is not modified, okay, or omega. So you can check that the action. So I let you check yourself, okay, to convince yourself that indeed translation is a symmetry of your action, okay, because I haven't shown that. Usually when we started with this first order action, we were saying, okay, so we know that general relativity, we have diffeomorphism. And since now we are working with this triad variable, we are adding this, at each point of our manifold now we have a small frame. So we have this additional rotation symmetry, okay? But we never talk about this translation symmetry, so you have to, if you want to convince yourself that it's indeed a symmetry of your action, this means that you just have to look at do this small calculation, okay? And what you're going to find if you replace this is that at the end it's going to simplify into the what we call the Bianchi identity, which is of course satisfied. Okay, so now we have two constraints, and we look at the interpretation of these two constraints. One is going to generate the rotation, the other one is going to generate this translation symmetry that is maybe surprising for you because it was not obvious from this. We didn't talk about this symmetry before. But so the question you can have now is where are the diffeo, okay? Because you were expecting a diffeo symmetry, and indeed your action is diffeo invariant, okay? So where is this diffeo symmetry? So first, from your lecture of GR, I guess you should know what would be the infinitesimal change of field under diffeo. You know that by definition, it's given by the Lie derivative. Okay, you have seen that? Or? Okay. So let's write explicitly what is on the triad. So this means that it's by definition, the diffeo is given by the Lie derivative. Which can be written where I am with the indices here. So mu, I guess is this. Ah, I get confused with this. So here, I just have this mu, and then I'm also supposed to have only one. What did I do? So then I guess I need to contract. Yeah, so you need to, okay, I'm not sure about the definition. If someone.
You contract, isn't that the contract B and E and?
Yeah. Is it like this, right? And then, okay. So I know that I have two contractions, but I'm okay. So I'm not sure about this definition. So you need to check. Okay, it's just that, yeah, it's, you just need to check what is the early derivative for this triad. Sorry about that. I think I get messed up. Anyone, does anyone is sure about the definition? Or? And then on the spin connection, again, it's going to be given by this Lie derivative. Well, hopefully this time I have the right uj plus yeah, so I think here I would more expect that maybe it's more like this. But sorry about that, I let you check, okay? So you can check that indeed this it's a symmetry of the action. If you start from your, before doing the canonical analysis, you can check that. But so now, if we impose the constraint, how do we get this DFAO symmetry? It's just that here the symmetry are not independent, okay? So we have relation among the symmetry generators. So here, the point is that the symmetries are not independent. Okay, we have some relation. Symmetry generator. So what do we get? And so what does it mean in particular? So this means that, so if we look at the variation with respect of the triad with the, for the rotation, well, I'm going to define this parameter here. I have, and the translation. Okay, with another parameter, I'm going to explain what are these parameters. Then what I get is that this gives me the variation with respect to the DFAO. Where here, omega v d naught. So it's omega, and it's what defined, you know that this is defined for any lambda, okay, so we, it's implemented for any lambda, so we can choose it like this, and again is, and this is what defines the parameter for the translation, so you see that a small rotation with this parameter plus a small translation with this parameter on the triad is going to give you, like if you were acting with a DFAO on your triad, plus you have a term here, but you see that this is equal to be zero on shell, okay? And you have the same relation if you look at the small, a small transformation on the connection, okay? So if now you look at the transformation and the connection, so I don't write you all the indices, then you're going to find that it's also a DFAO plus a term which again is going to be zero on chain. Okay, so what does it mean here? So you see that you have this relation. This also explains why 3D gravity is very simple. Okay, it's because DFAO can be replaced by a translation symmetry, in fact. Okay, so this means that here, if we implement just the Gauss constraint, the flatness constraint, and we look on shell, it means that we indeed have DFAO invariant solution. Okay, so we don't need to deal with DFAO explicitly here, we can just deal with translation. So this is really what makes 3D gravity very simple, and of course, this you don't have, you don't really have this in 4D, even in 4D, usually we are going to look at the DFAO, we are going to look at the DFAO on the spatial hypersurface, and then the time evolution. And really, so the special one can be a bit related to this one, but the time evolution is always, which is going to give you the Hamiltonian constraint, is always the tricky part in 4D. Okay, so we don't have this complete simplification. So here, DFO can be replaced by a translation symmetry. Okay, so we're almost done. So now we have the geometrical the interpretation of the constraint. The only thing we need to check is, so here Alfred already mentioned it. He said that we are dealing with first-class constraint. And indeed, from the interpretation is what we are expecting, because we see that these constraints are generating our gauge symmetries. And we have seen that first-class constraints generate symmetry. But so just let's quickly look at the constraint algebra. So I'm just going to give you the result. And so if you want to do the calculation yourself, it's quite. So this means that we want to look if the constraint surface is invariant under gauge transformation. So this means that we want to look at the flow of the constraint on the constraint themselves. So if we look at the constraint algebra, this means we want to look at the Poisson bracket between two different Gauss constraints. And we also need to look at the Poisson bracket between F, the flatness constraint, and G. So I'm not going to do the calculation. The calculation is quite, once you have this variation here, okay, you can use that directly. Of course, you will have to perform some integration by parts, but here we are dealing with a smeared constraint, so you will have integration. And then you need to look at the Poisson bracket between two flatness constraints. Okay, so let's maybe look at first this one. Two different flatness constraints. What do you expect here? Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah, why?
Because it's like translations, right? So it doesn't matter the.
Yeah, so this is good because you're giving the geometrical interpretation. Also, from an algebraic point of view, it just, if you remember that this is just a function of the connection A, okay? So you will have just A with A, okay? You don't have any E, and we know that the Poisson bracket between two different connections are going to be always zero. Okay, very good. And here, so maybe, Eugene, you know, because here we have two, so it's like two generator of rotation. So what do you get here?
Another rotation.
Yeah, another rotation, where now the new parameter is given by the commutator. Okay, we are here, we are seeing that as Lie-valued object. So, yeah, so you can see that because here you see that you have only one internal indices. So what does it mean here when I don't talk with internal indices? This means that here I'm really looking at this contracted with a generator of the Lie algebra, okay, to do this calculation completely. And here, so we have a flatness, so it's a translation with a rotation, and then we get a translation where the parameter of the translation is going to be rotated, okay? So we have, again, this rotation. And so what this constraint algebra is going to mirror is going to, it's just the semi-direct product. So this algebra. Semi-direct product of translation with rotation, okay? Of translation and rotation. So I don't know if you know this notation. When you have a semi-direct product, we use this kind of symbol here, okay? It's just because, and this is a rotation. And what is really important here is that we call that this is a closed algebra, okay? And why do we have first class constraints? Because of course on the constraint algebra, on the constraint surface, these are equal to zero, okay? So weakly, these are all zero. So we indeed have first class constraint, okay? So we say that we have a closed, when we say that we have a closed algebra, okay, this means that the Poisson bracket between constraints has to be a linear combination of constraints. And this is the case here, so weakly, these are all equal to zero. Okay, so this is what now we are going to quantize. Okay, so we did the canonical analysis of the 3D first order action of gravity. And today what we did is finish the interpretation of the constraint. So we have two constraints, two different kinds of constraints. One is generating the rotation, one is generating the translation. And we have seen that rotation plus translation, in fact, is going to give diffeomorphism invariant. Okay. And the constraint algebra is simple because it's a closed one, so we don't have any issue. We are really dealing with first-class constraint. So it's not the, we can now try to go to the Dirac quantization program. Okay, so any questions here? Okay, so let's move to the second part. So now we are really going to talk about quantization, finally, after 1 week. It was a bit, maybe, long for you. And first, I'm going to give you what is the program, okay? And then we're going to go to come back to this example of the parameterized particle first, because you will see that we will need another week, more or less, to implement the quantization, the Dirac quantization program to 3D gravity, to this first order action. And so I guess you're going to get a bit lost to in which step are we. So I want to really give you now the step of this program and to show you that we can apply it on this example. And also why this example is interesting is that it's a simple system with a gauge. So we have seen that it has a gauge symmetry, which is very similar to the Diffeo symmetry with this parameterized time, with the time variable becoming also a dynamical variable. And it's a simple way which allows us to perform the three different kinds of quantization. So what are the three quantization I'm talking about? So the usual one in the canonical approach is usually when you start from the reduced phase space directly and you quantize this reduced phase space, okay? But we will see that, so I'm going to talk about this in the parameterized particle, but this is not always possible. So the Dirac quantization is going to start really from the kinematical phase space, okay? So we're going to come back to that. So this is the second approach. So here we could have three different approaches. So start from the reduced phase space and still do a canonical quantization, and this is more or less the standard quantization, okay? If you go to the unparameterized particle, it's like come back to the unparameterized particle here and to do the Schrödinger quantization, and here we have the Dirac one that we're going to do. And then, of course, you could also do, we won't do that on this one, but you could also look at the path integral, okay? And for the gravity, we are going to use these two different. So we first, this week we are going to talk about the Dirac in gravity approach, and then next week we are going to talk about the path integral one, okay? And then compare them in 3D. Okay, so what is the main, so in these two approaches, what is important is that these two approaches are canonical approaches. So we start with a phase space description, okay? And we have seen that a phase space description, when we are talking with a system with gauge symmetry, you really need to, so this is going to lead to constraint. And so you really need to make the distinction between what we call the kinematical one, which is the one we are going to start with before imposing any constraint, okay, and the physical phase space, where you already are, which can also be called the reduced phase space, where we already implemented the constraint, but also we fix the gauge, okay? So here in this physical phase space, this means that now we are in one-to-one correspondence with a space of physically distinct solution, okay? So this means that you need to solve everything, it's like solving the dynamics, okay? In the case of gravity, at least, since it's a totally constrained system, to be here really mean to solve the dynamics, and then to find the Dirac, what we call the Dirac observables and everything. So what is the, now we want to do a canonical quantization. So canonical what does it mean to do a canonical quantization? That means that here we want to turn at least a subset of phase space function as operator acting on a Hilbert space. Okay, so here we want to find operator acting and so, as I said, we have two options. Either we do the what we more or less is what you should know, which is the standard quantization, okay, or radius field space quantization when we are talking about a gauge, a system with gauge symmetry, so with constraint, okay, you need to, and which is based here on. It's also the reduced phase space quantization. And indeed, this one is based on the physical phase space. And if we go to the example of the parametrized particle, then the idea is just to go back to the unparametrized particle and then to do the standard Schrödinger quantization, okay? But so the point is that this physical phase space might have a very complicated structure. For example, it doesn't have to be a manifold. If it's a quotient space, usually it's not even a manifold, so we don't really know how to then quantize the parametric. Parametrization also can be not provided in terms of local fields, okay? Or even sometimes you don't really have access to the physical, the radio space space, okay? So that's why we are interested in the Dirac quantization, and let's see what is the difference. And let's apply that to the case of the parametrized particle. So this is a Dirac program, okay? So I'm going to use now this other blackboard to go step by step in the case of the parametrized particle. And I'm just going to, I let you read and I'm going to give you some comment and then apply this program in the case of the parametrized particle. And see why, in the case of the parametrized particle, we can do everything, but where the difficulty are going to come from in the case of gravity, okay? Even if in 3D gravity, finally, we can do it. It's just that it's not so. Easy. Okay, so let's first give you some so this is a Dirac program. So instead of starting directly from the reduced phase space, the physical phase space, you start from the kinematical phase space. So the first step is then to find a representation of the phase space variable, so you're in the kinematical one, as operator in a, what you're going to call a kinematical Hilbert space. So you need also for us Hilbert space means that you need a inner product, okay? And then you want that they satisfy the standard commutation relation. So what does it mean here? This means that you started with variable, conjugated variable in your phase space, satisfying Poisson bracket. So now you want to check that this is going to give you this correspondence between, now you have operator, so you're going to deal with the commutator, okay? And then, of course, so we are just at the kinematical level. So we still have to deal with the constraint. So then the next step is to promote this constraint to, oh, we're going to look at self-adjoint operators acting in this Hilbert space. And then we need to find the space of solution. Okay, so we have constraints, which are operator. We are going to act with this operator in the kinematic on the function in this Hilbert space and try to find the space of solution of the constraint. And then the tricky part usually is going to find the associated inner product. Because in most cases, the inner product you were using in the kinematical Hilbert space is not going to be valid in the physical Hilbert space, sorry, because we are going to see that usually we're going to get divergences if we use the same one. So we need to find, so in the case of the parametrized particle, this is going to be easy to find because we can always go back to this example you already know to quantize, okay? To this case, you're ready to find, to get an idea of what you should get. And then you need to find a complete set of gauge invariant observable. And these are going to represent the questions that you can that can be addressed in the generally covariant theory. Okay, which what can we measure? Okay, so these are the different steps. So any question for this? Okay, so let's try to apply that to example of the parametrized particle now. And then tomorrow we'll start to apply this to gravity, where things are going to become a bit more complicated. So what is your starting point? What is the kinematical phase space here in the case of the parametrized particle? Do you remember? What are your variables? What is the dimension first?
We have Q and T and they're kind of...
Yeah, very good. Okay, so we have Q, T, and then PQ, that you're saying PT, so it's four dimensional, okay? So in this case, we can simply take for the kinematical Hilbert space, so this is a phase space, now we want to have a wave function. So we can just take the squared integrable function on R2, okay? Because we want now wave function, which is going to depend on Q and T. And we can just simply define the inner product as, so between two wave function, we're going to get with an integration over dq dt, so an integration over R2. Then, but if we're dealing with squared integrable function, and what we said, we need to promote phase space variable to self-adjoint operator, okay? And check the satisfying the appropriate commutation relation. So now this is the first step. Then the second step is to promote this phase space variable, so Q and T as operator and PQ and PT as operator. So what is the standard choice here? We want to do and also PQ as an operator and PT. And then we need to check the commutation relation. So do you know what is the standard choice here? Yeah.
You can take them as multiplicative operators.
Yeah, very good. And this one as
derivatives.
Yeah, okay. So this means that here I just want that they act by multiplication. So this means that I would have something like this. Okay, so they act by multiplication, and this one are going to be act by differentiation. The momentum operators are going to act by differentiation. So we need also to add this I and H bar in order to have the right commutation relation. And and t. Okay, and so now you can, so I let you do that. Check that the that commutators it's quite straightforward. Produce. So the Poisson bracket modulo this h I h bar. Okay. Okay, very good. So this was just the first step. Now, so we have our kinematical Hilbert space with our wave function. And now what is the second step? Now is to deal with the constraint. So we need to promote the constraint to operators. So now the second step. So I remind you, we have only one constraint, which was given by so here we can just directly replace. We don't have any issue of regularization or anything of or ordering. And so if I replace, what I get is this equation. So can you, what is this? If now I want to solve this on and so what is this equation? Do you recognize it? Yeah.
Yes, Schrodinger equation.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so here it's just the Schrodinger equation. So you see that indeed it's very close to what is going to be done in just the radio phase space. And but here, so this part here in this example is quite simple. Okay, we don't have any issue, but this step can be non-trivial in a field theory due to regularization issue or stuff like this. Okay, so here, of course, it's quite straightforward. But so now the third step is to find solution. Okay, so here, since you solution of the quantum constraint or just solution of the Schrodinger equation, and you know that a set of solution can be characterized just by specifying just the initial wave. Okay, so here you can just initial wave form and then you use the standard Schrodinger representation. Find any other then to get your physical state, which depends Q and T here, and it's exponential. T time T zero time T Q. Okay, but so now, of course, what is in this step? You need to find the solution of the constraint, and the non-trivial part is really usually also to find the inner product associated to that. Because let's have a look here in this example. If we use just the inner product we use in the kinematical Hilbert space, okay, so this one. So what do we get here if we use inner product So let's just look at this between two wave function. So what do we get here? We get that this is exponential. One conjugated times T0 and here we have this integration over dt dq, and of course this can simplify into just conjugated, which depend only on Q now, and we are performing dQ dt. So you see that this, so we have two integrations, the first one on dQ, but this is going to be constant along the orbit, the gauge orbit, which have here we are integrating over dt, so it has a infinite length, okay? So here this is invariant constant along gauge orbit. So we're going to get that this is equal to infinity. So here, and this is the issue we're going to get as soon as we're going to deal with gauge or non-compact gauge orbit, okay? So this is, and so this is always going to happen as soon as you're going to integrate over gauge degrees of freedom. So here we have a gauge degrees of freedom, we're integrating over, and this gauge orbit is non-compact, okay? So we get, so, and what is the issue here is that we are using the kinematical in our product. Which includes, of course, integration over the gauge degrees of freedom. So one has to choose a physical, what is the physical here in our product? And this you can guess, so I'm just going to finish on that. So you find the, yeah, for the space of solution to the constraint equation, and usually to find this physical inner product is really the crucial step in Dirac quantization, and it's what is going to determine what is the size of your physical inner physical Hilbert space. Okay, so but in the case of the parameterized particle, we can still borrow the inner product from the reduced phase space. Okay, because we know how to solve everything using the reduced quantization. So in this case, we can do that, but sometimes we don't have any guidelines, okay? So here, we are just going to borrow the one we know, and we're going to see that it's going to work, of course. So using a physical now in our product, and it's going to be given because we need to fix the gauge, so t is going to be as a fixed parameter, okay? And of course, I don't have space, so. But you understand, so here. And q. And q, and then you only have an integration over dq, okay? So this is just, and what is your physical Hilbert space? Indeed, the physical Hilbert space is the one you would get using the standard quantization, is just integrable function over R, squared integrable function over R. And so just then the next, so this is the end of the third step, then the last step is to find a complete set of gauge invariant observables. So here we, at the classical level, we already computed what was the we add a set of two. We know that we want two gauge, we want 2 degrees of freedom, so we have 2 independent observables, phi q, fq, and fp of q. It's the one we have chosen when we fix the gauge on t, okay? And here it's easy to promote that to operator, okay? But it's not, of course, already this at the classical level is not always easy, so you guess that to define this operator is not always a straightforward step, okay? So this was just to give you how the Dirac program is going to work. And of course, if you go back to this operator, this observable, you can really show that you recover exactly what you would get doing the reduced phase space quantization, okay? In this case of the parameterized particle. So these are the different steps. And tomorrow we are going to start to apply this to gravity, okay? So we are going to start from our action with our phase space, kinematical phase space. And we are going to spend some time on this, just this first step already, okay? So any questions here? So I think tomorrow is